Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2, Joan Haber interviewing Elizabeth Schuster, March 7, 1984, Part 2. To set the record straight, do you want to add some information about Sunday school?
Yes, you know, your memory fails you when you're talking, you forget things. It was called the Pittsburgh School for Reformed Judaism, and we had about 16 families with maybe 25 children in it. The confirmation class that I was talking about, these children were confirmed in 1958. This was not the first class, couldn't have been, because in 1958 my daughter would have been almost 19. So that there were at least one, maybe two, earlier confirmation classes before that.
How long do you think it ran?
Oh, about 4 or 5 years, my guess. This is a guess, and I'm going. I'm really going by the ages of my children to figure this out. Yeah, yeah.
Do you think it accomplished any or all of its goals?
Well, it's very hard to say. I think we all went into it with different goals. Mine happened to be a feeling, a double feeling, a feeling that the children should know something about what they were, and also a very great interest in ethical behavior, which I don't necessarily think has to be associated with religious belief, but it's not a bad place to teach it. And it seems to me that they learned a good deal. I enjoyed it. I mean, if that was one of the benefits, I enjoyed the experience. I thought it was a fascinating thing to do, to interact with these children's minds. I thought was wonderful. I don't know how the other teachers felt, but that's how I felt.
Well, how about your children? Did they rebel against it?
No. They enjoyed it, I think. I think when we were talking last time, I mentioned some reasons why we had decided to try this, and one that I had forgotten about, and I think was very important, that Rhoda Sholem was treating this like a school. They would have examinations and they would grade the children, you know, A, B, C, D, or they failed a test or something. Well, it seemed to me, and maybe seemed to others, that you don't wean children toward religion by giving them a test at which they maybe fail. That is not a way to make them like something. I thought that was a wrong approach. That was another reason for not liking what they were doing at Temple. It always seemed to me, though I don't have any experience of it, that the other Sunday schools tried to make their children enjoy what they were doing. And this was one of the motives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, would you contrast Squirrel Hill of 1984?
Yeah.
To Squirrel Hill of your growing up years, culturally?
That's hard. What do you mean by culturally? I find that a difficult... if you mean there wasn't as much here as there is now, obviously there wasn't. There was a movie, as I think I told you. There was no library, of course, but that's even very recent. There weren't all the shops. There were some, a few. Adele's was one of the very early stores on the other side of the street, and there was anything as big as it is now, of course. There were no, as far as I know, in those days there were no Jewish congregations up here, I don't think. I don't know what the date of Beth Sholem is. But certainly the Tree of Life wasn't here. It was down on Craft Avenue, in past Oakland. there was no Alderdice. Alderdice didn't come along during my high school years. That was after that. Lyndon was here and Whiteman was mm-hmm. here. And Colfax, they were all mm-hmm. here. But Alderdice came a good deal later because, as I told you, we had between Shenley and Peabody to decide.
Well, what are your earliest recollections of, let's say, Forbes and Murray?
Well, Forbes and Murray.
Area.
Funny thing is that I can't remember an awful lot about it. I remember the Orpheum Theater, and there was a vacant lot next to it. And the reason I know there was a vacant lot was because I took my young cousin to the movies, and he embarrassed me in the middle of the movies by calling out the top of his voice, "I have to pee pee." And there were no, apparently I guess there were no toilets in the movie. If there were, I didn't know about them. And we took him to the vacant lot behind the billboard next to the movie so he could pee. I never took him to another movie, that was it. So I know that was there, but I really don't remember what else. It can't have been very much. I think most of it was Fields. I know that this was true because we used to go on picnics, and we didn't have to go very far to find an empty field where we would pick violets and have a picnic meal. And of course now it would be a very difficult to find. You could go to Frick Park, I suppose, but that was it. But I really don't remember, because I don't remember when the manor came along. After all, the Orpheum was there, the manor wasn't. In other words, the manor was a much later movie than the Orpheum. So what was around the corner on Murray Avenue, I truly don't remember. No recollection of what was there. The only clear thing, and why the movie is so clear in my mind, I don't know. But that is, and the rest of it isn't. The church can't have been there.
Oh, well, I don't think so.
I don't think it's that old.
Do you have any recollections of your life during the Depression?
Well, of course, the Depression, I started to work then. In 1931 was when I started to work. So that, I was already grown up. Some of the things I remember that I thought about after you left, I began thinking about it, that I remember from my childhood was the circus. Going to the circus. There was an empty lot somewhere down in East Liberty, and every year, it was either East Liberty or Point Breezeway, somewhere around there, and every year Ringling Brothers would come, not out in Heidelberg or wherever it is they go, but in the city, because we used to go. Forbes Field was there. Used to go to baseball games.
And didn't the circus come right up Forbes Avenue?
You mean the parade?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure. The parade used to come up there. Yeah, yeah. And there was a little store in East Liberty on Frankstown Avenue, right near Penn, and in the window was a little streetcar. And you put a nickel or a penny, I don't remember what it was, in a slot in the window, and the little streetcar would light up and run around on a track, and there were little dolls, you know, inside. That was one of the things we used to do. It was a treat for us to go down there and see the little streetcar go round and round.
No wonder you didn't forget that.
No.
What about World War II? Can you remember? Well, are there any?
World War II. I didn't have any very close association with it. Gene had applied for a commission, was turned down because he had various physical things that prevented him from doing this. So that I had no close association with it.
Did you perhaps work with civil defense?
I think Red Cross stuff. I think like rolling bandages and that I can remember doing things like that. And I remember rationing rationing. Oh, very clearly. That I remember. Ration books, rations, I don't even know what you call them.
Sugar.
And sugar. Remember the sugar, because for some stupid reason, Ruth, my sister-in-law, and I decided in the middle of that that we were going to put up peaches. We had never done it in our lives before, never. And why we picked that particular time to put up peaches, somebody gave us a whole bunch of peaches from their own, you know, orchards. And so we used this little bitty sugar that we had to put up jars of peaches, the first time and the last time I ever did anything like that. But so I remember that, and I remember starting to use margarine, because butter costs so many points. And at first we mixed it half and half, half butter, half margarine. And then when our points ran out, we used all margarine. We used to color it. Bags with plastic bags with a little capsule in, and you squished them up until it got yellow, and then you packed it into a container. Mm-hmm. Yes, that I remember. Mm-hmm. I don't remember any
coffee.
Coffee, yeah, you know, I wasn't a coffee drinker, so that wouldn't have made any impression on me. I was a very late coffee drinker. I didn't start to drink, I started to drink coffee in the 30s, but I really was a milk drinker anyhow. And I still don't drink a lot of coffee.
Well, now, in what capacity have you served in organizations other than the League of Women Voters?
Never very active. As I think I said, I did some work at the Montefiore Hospital when they first opened, and I worked in the outpatient department there. I think they used us as secretaries, sort of, and receptionists and people like that. And I worked for the, it would be the county well baby clinics. They used us to weigh the babies and to make notes that the doctors told us to make, and to entertain the children while they were waiting, and so on. And I did that. I remember that I was working full time from 31 to 39 after the flood that I told you about last time. I was called back to work. I got my old job back right after my work with the Red Cross ended. And that was in 36, in August, about August of 36. And I worked until April of 39, when I was just barely pregnant with Ellen, but they made me stop because I'd had a miscarriage. So they made me stop early, which was stupid, because we moved that year, and I moved trunks, you know, instead of working, I just moved trunks during my pregnancy. Didn't do me any harm. I have always belonged to a lot of things. I've never done anything very much. Starting with 39, after all, I had three children in five years. And in 1948, and PTAs, of course, that while the children were in Whiteman School, I was Madam PTA all the time.
Were you an officer?
I was various things. I was the secretary and I was the first vice president. I was offered the presidency and refused, and I don't remember now why. That was a good reason, but for some reason I didn't want to take it. Yes, I was extremely active in the PTA over at Whiteman. And starting in 1948, I started to do my husband's bookkeeping and billing, all of it. He had a secretary. 1 month we didn't get any money in. Couldn't figure out. None. And, you know, it's a little hard to live that way. And when we investigated it, we found out that this secretary was sending bills out to people who had overdue bills. In other words, anybody who owed money, so all she had to do was take what was already in the book. She sent bills out to and sent out no bills to anybody who had come in during the month. It was a new patient. I don't know why. I mean, the whole thing was kind of screwball. So she went, and my mother had done my father's bookkeeping. It was a tradition, and I like to fiddle with figures anyhow. So I said, I'll do it. I said, I'll do it if you keep your records of your house calls in a different way than you're keeping them now, because I couldn't do it from the way you're scribbling. So we worked out a system for him to keep track of his calls. And I did his bookkeeping from then on. I mean, that was it. So that I was somewhat busy at home, too. I belonged at one time to a committee of the council. And I'll tell you what it was. It had to do with Council House. I remember that. Frieda Shapiro got me into it. And I don't remember the exact things that we were doing. But it was after I was in the League, and it worked differently than the League worked, and I wasn't accustomed to it, and I got impatient with it. It seemed to me that we weren't serving any particular purpose. We were listening to what other people said, but our input didn't amount to anything. We were almost like a rubber stamp committee, and it disturbed me, so that I didn't stick with that very long. And I've never been the kind of person to go to the fashion shows and the big get-togethers of these organizations. Never have cared very much for them. So it was really, I've always been a token membership with me. I belong forever to all of them. Ladies Hospital Aid and the Jewish Home for the Aged and every one of them, but I've never done anything beyond what I already
said. Well, how did you get involved, and when did you get involved?
How did I get involved with the League? It was about it was either 58 or 59, I can't remember which. Edith Lauer, who lives two doors down from me, had been a member for quite a while and had talked to me about it and suggested that I might be interested, but from about 54 to 57 or so, that was the time when Peter was so very ill, and I hadn't time to even think about doing anything outside the home. In either 58 or 59, I forget which, when he was better and he was back in high school, I decided to go to a meeting with her one day, and I went over to a meeting at Gladys Benedict. And I felt like a fish out of water. They were talking about water pollution. And they'd been studying it for about 4 years. And they were talking Greek, as far as I was concerned. I couldn't understand half of what they were saying. But because Edith took me, and I felt, well, whatever she said is good to do, I joined then and there at that meeting. Not knowing anything really about what they did or what they were or very much about them at all. Well, it's a very funny thing when you join, in those days, I don't think it's so much like that anymore, but in those days when you joined an organization like that, they pulled you in rapidly and immersed you without your knowing it or wanting it or anything. Within 6 months, I was what they called a unit chairman, and within a year, I think it was 1960, I was part of a committee that was studying the finances of the Pittsburgh Public Schools. Mm-hmm. I went to a meeting at Edith's. There were 15 of us there. We wanted to study the finances of the Pittsburgh schools, and it was a so-called not recommended item. In other words, the board hadn't received enough input from the various groups to recommend it. When you try to put through a non-recommended item, you need a bigger vote than you need for a recommended item, and we had to work out strategy, what we would do at the annual meeting to have this adopted. And we all sat around and talked with one of the old-time members, Dorothy Boyne, who's not here anymore, leading it. And she asked us all to write down a one-minute thing that we could say at the annual meeting. In those days, the annual meetings were very large, and there were microphones. You had to speak into a microphone, or you wouldn't be heard. There were 100, 150 people at the annual meetings. This doesn't happen anymore. And so I wrote down a one-minute thing. I don't remember what it was. And when it was time for me to read mine, I read mine, and Dorothy said, fine, you get up and you say that at the annual meeting. I said, what are you talking about? I'm not going to say anything at the annual meeting. Of course you are, she said. You wrote it. It's your idea. You get up to the microphone and you do it. And we had meetings at the at Webster Hall in one of the big rooms there. And I did it. I think my knees knocked together. I've never been so nervous in my whole life, but I did. And then to our surprise, the item was adopted in spite of being non-recommended. And we studied the finance of the Pittsburgh schools for the next year, and I was part of the committee that did it. And when you're part of the committee, you have to go around to the various units and present it to them and so on. And one of the things they used to say, there was a subsidy system that the legislature used to figure out how much money to give various school systems. And they used to say only three people in the legislature understand this system. Well, we had a member, Beth Tour, who was very good at math, and she said, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. I'll work it out, and we'll make it understandable to everybody. So she did, and I may even have them still worked out with sheet cardboard, those shirt cardboards, you know, to show them how the subsidy system worked and what the legislature did to decide what schools got how much money. And we found ourselves explaining it to the legislators because they didn't understand, but we did. And much to my surprise, I became knowledgeable about something that really I had never looked at, thought about, paid attention to before, and I found myself talking to these little units, which were in those days anywhere from 15 to 25 members. They were large. They're not that large anymore, but they were then. And I shook. One of the girls, Phyllis Berkowitz, used to go with me, said, hope they have a card table there so they won't see my knees shaking. But you get used to things, I suppose. And before very long, I was speaking to Rotary clubs and to the Women's Day Out group at the Unitarian Church, and to everybody, and paying no attention, thinking nothing of it. Then after that, I was chairman of the state study of the state adopted a study of finances and makeup of all the schools in Pennsylvania, and I was the chairman of the Pittsburgh group that did that study. And matter of fact, when PCPE, the Pittsburgh Council on Public Education, was first deciding to get started, I gave them all the information we had collected on the state study to help them get going and to understand the subsidy system and so on. As a matter of fact, I worked on their bylaw committee to help them set up their bylaws. I wasn't active in it after that. I mean, I'm a member. But all these things that surprised me, that I would have said if you had asked me in 58, I would have said, I can't do any of that stuff. I don't want to. I'm not interested, and I'm not good at it. I don't want to do this sort of thing. And all of a sudden, you find you're doing all kinds of things that you had no idea that you could ever do.
You had never spoken to a group?
Never. Had never, never. Nothing. The Sunday school was the only thing I had ever done. It was at all public, and that was, what, a handful of children. I mean, you know, that's a little different. And I did practice teaching also with children, but I had never spoken to an adult group, never. So, and then I began to get interested in voter registration. When they passed the or we're going to pass the law giving the vote to the 18-year-old kids. We went around to all the high schools in the Pittsburgh area and registered all the, there was no mail registration, and had to be done before a registrar, and we all had ourselves sworn in as registrars, and we went around to the high schools and registered all these children who would be 18 by the time of the next election. Actually, the law didn't pass until after we'd done this, but it passed, and all these kids got registered. I don't know how many of them ever voted. When we did voter registration at Pitt later on, we would bump into some of these children who would produce a little blue slip of paper that we used to give them to indicate that that they had registered, mm-hmm. and they would pull this out and say, is this still good? You gave it to me at such and such a high school a while back. And so, you know, a lot of them registered and then paid no attention to it after that. But I've continued to do voter registration. Of course, we don't do as much as we did because it's mail now, and they can do it themselves. But some places, they need encouragement. I did some recently at the Jewish Home for the Aged. A couple of us went up there and helped them to fill out the mail registration forms. And then I was secretary. After I was chairman, I was secretary for a couple of years. And I think I was president after I was secretary. I lose track, you know. I think it went that way, but I don't remember exactly. Now, ordinarily, the president can serve two terms, and only two terms, two-year terms. And ordinarily, I would have taken another term, but my term expired in 69, and my husband was already ill by that time. As a matter of fact, I spent a lot of time in the hospital reading reports and so on, so that I could in no way do it another year. And so I only served a two-year term. And since then, I've done all kinds of odd jobs. I decided I could stand having sabbaticals anyway. I mean, once you've been president, that's that full-time job, and you can have a rest from that. But I've done a lot of budget committee. I've been budget committee chairman, and I've been on the budget committee until this year, and I said, for heaven's sake, enough is enough to take me off the budget committee. it's a strange thing, but a lot of people don't like numbers and hate to fiddle with them, and I enjoy it. So it never was, you know.
Perhaps they're intimidated.
I'm sure that must be it, though. What surprised me was the first annual meeting I ever went to, when they presented the budget for the following year. I thought it would be one of those automatic things like the minutes, you know, any objections. It wasn't. People questioned. Members questioned things on the items in the budget. Oh, they raised all kinds of questions. I was startled out of my wits. I'd never heard of an organization that they asked questions about the proposed budget.
Did you find that the League was unique in this respect?
Well, I haven't an awful lot of experience with other groups, but it's certainly, BTA was never like that. And as far as I could tell, other groups weren't like that. And there was a concern, an individual concern, that I hadn't bumped into. The other thing, and I think this is one of the things that I like about the League, it's an entree all over the country. If you belong to the League here and you go to Chicago and you want to find a group, all you do is get next to the local League, and you've got a group of people who think like you do. They don't have to be the same politics or anything like that. It's just that they are concerned with the same sort of things you're concerned about. It's very interesting. And we used to be fancier in the old days, and I think Nancy Freeman was president when I first joined, And the thing that the notice of the annual meeting said, come to the annual meeting and see Leaguers in hats. We used to come to the annual meeting wearing hats, which we never did at any other thing we ever went to. We had flowered hats and all kinds of hats. That faded out after a while, but it went on for several years after I joined. But we were an extremely informal group. We have become even more informal. Our minutes used to use last names, Mrs. So-and-so, you know, like that, no longer. Of course, I don't think that's just League. I think that's everybody has done that. You don't refer to people necessarily, women, by their married names anymore.